Hi, I'm Peter Clark with linguist Kate Burridge. This is Inside Language. Oh, Kate, another tree bites the dust. You can hear all that chopping going on. A bit of cleaving. I know, that's a very forced segue, is it not? But we want to talk about contronyms today, and it just so happens that cleave is one of our English contronyms. Please explain.
Contronyms are, or sometimes dubbed auto-antonyms, or even genus words, so two-faced words, words that are their own opposites. They're fascinating things. So yes, cleave has the meaning of, well, the main meaning is to split apart, but it can also mean to stick together, as in cleaving to the roof of your mouth. That one, I think, is disappearing. It's not a good thing for a word to have such opposing meanings. So usually, if they appear in the same context, you'll find that language or speakers will jettison one of the words.
And I suppose a fairly similar one like hew. You can hew wood, but you can hew to a political line.
That's an interesting one because I think the contexts are so different that maybe that one will survive. It's a little like trim. You know, trim normally means lopping off, but if it's a Christmas tree, you're putting things on, trimming the Christmas tree. Or if you're dusting something, normally you're taking dust away, but if you dust for fingerprints or if you dust cake with icing sugar.
Or your face with face powder.
Yes, exactly. So the contexts are different enough that they can coexist happily. Another good example would be let. In fact, originally two verbs, letan in Old English meaning to end, to stop, and latan meaning to allow, and they both collided through sound change, giving us let meaning to stop, hinder, and let meaning to permit, allow. Well, you can't do that, that's intolerable. So that let meaning not allow has disappeared, except for the let ball in tennis. I noticed that a lot of people now say a net ball for tennis because let ball sounds so odd.
Netball makes more sense.
It does make more sense. And that's a lovely example of our sort of remodelling of expressions that over time have become obscure.
What fascinates me, Kate, is that there are so many of these contronyms and some of them seem very old words. It's not as if this has just happened recently. These words which have exactly opposite meanings,
yes.
How has that happened?
In the case of the let and the cleave, it's sound change, and you can understand that perhaps more readily because sound change just happens willy-nilly, you know, with no regard for the other aspects of the language. Whereas what fascinates me more is when you've got one word and the meanings of that word sort of part company and go down different tracks. So an example of that would be something like fast. Well, this is a relatively recent one. So fast used to mean, you know, fixed, not moving, that you get it in steadfast. Whereas now, of course, more usually it means quickly moving. So how on earth did that happen? Someone suggested it's the idea of sticking fast to the on the heels of something or someone you're in pursuit of. It's not really that clear, but that's the meaning that's dominating now. So it is a contronym. Another one that's happened recently is literally, well, relatively recently. Literally in its core sense, meaning actually.
Literally is driving me nuts at the moment, I've got to be honest with you, because it's very confusing.
It is. I suppose if I said to you, you know, she literally fainted on the floor, you wouldn't know whether she actually did or whether was I just being, you know, using this kind of exaggeration.
Or is she a drama queen?
That's right. And that's the sense that's usually used in everyday language. And in fact, now, much to many people's horror, it has entries in the Oxford and Macquarie dictionaries and other dictionaries as well. Has been in the language a while. You know, in the 1800s, I came across a reference to someone literally coining money for 4 years or something. So I think it was that exaggerated sense then.
Kate, that's an interesting drift, isn't it, with literally? Is it the same linguistic set of forces at work or is it very different? You've mentioned sound and you've mentioned meaning. They're obviously two related but different realms. But can you see a pattern of linguistic forces at work on all these contronyms?
There seem to be a number of different forces, I think, and sometimes these do coincide. I was thinking the other day of a contronym, in fact, that got me into trouble because I only realised relatively recently that I was using this expression in completely the opposite sense that my students were understanding it. And I used to say things like, well, you know, London English lucked out, meaning it was in a lucky position, it was in the right place at the right time, so it was the one that found itself in the dictionaries. Not realising that for most of my students, luck out means to be in an unlucky position. And they are thinking there, I think, of luck running out, shit out of luck. You know, there are a lot of expressions that would be helping that word, that expression along that path. So that's one I simply avoid now. Hoi polloi is another one. I mean, it's not a very usual word, which means it's prone to be reanalyzed, but hoi polloi meaning, you know, the masses, and most younger speakers understand it to be the upper crust, you know, because it sounds a bit like haughty and high.
That's right.
Sometimes called clang association, or it's a sort of contamination. And interestingly, hoity-toity used to mean the rabble or refer to the rabble. It also shifted in a very similar way. We're always on the lookout for some sort of, you know, association between how something sounds and what it means. And that's a big driver of meaning shifts and words even shifting pronunciation as well.
It's not just between Australia and the UK. Australia and New Zealand, you can use the same phrase and have exactly the opposite meaning.
A good example of that would be to jack up. It means in New Zealand English to expedite, but to in Australian English, quite the opposite, in fact. These dialectal contronyms are actually quite common and can be problematic if you don't realise that. Barrack is a good example. In Australian English, if you barrack for someone, you're cheering for that team or whatever, whereas in British English, it means the opposite, sort of more jeer, I suppose.
Irish derivation.
Yes, that's right, yes.
So that's how we got it into Australian English, barracking for someone.
Yes.
But in another setting, it could be having a go at them, almost slagging them off. And we won't even go to the rooting for someone, will we? That's an entirely different story.
No, is that a contronym? Same with Fanny, of course.
There we are. We're getting into some, they're more the Australian English versus US English sort
that's
of
right,
example.
Yes. This phenomenon, sometimes known as genital flip-flop, causes a lot of problems with body parts. They're not exactly contronyms, but they are certainly problematic meaning shifts.
So I bring you back to that basic question before we finish this conversation, Kate. How has a language that prides itself, well, the language doesn't do it, but we pride ourselves on a language that's efficient, can be finely parsed, yet have a great proliferation of these contronyms? How is that possible?
Well, it's just language change again. So many forces that are involved in making a language move in a certain direction that these things can happen. The sounds can change, meanings can kind of trot off in a different context. I love that description by the wonderful linguist Dwight Bollinger when he talks about meanings. He talks about meanings that are inside and central, and then he talks about meanings that are inside but peripheral, and then he talks rather beautifully about meanings that hover on the outside like a pack of hungry flies. So when you've got that sort of situation, I mean, words aren't these tight little bundles of form and meaning that people like to think they are when they go and look up the meaning of a word in the dictionary. So that allows for a lot of slippage, and to the point that you even get the case of contronyms.
What you're reminding us of, Kate, is that, yes, words are just symbols, either oral symbols or visual symbols, and that ultimately it has been decided through the process of usage or whatever for them to be the appropriate symbol, but the slippage obviously is there through usage, through just the world happening around us, I suppose.
And you don't know what's going on in your interlocutor's head, so you don't know that the rest of the class is understanding luck out in that meaning. Or another one I encountered recently, doozy. I've always understood a doozy to be something really wonderful, but in fact, for younger speakers again, a doozy is something that's not good, is rather bad. It must have been used in a sort of ironic sense, you know, a doozy day for a picnic when it's pouring with rain or something, and then, you know, for the younger speakers, then they understand it to be something negative.
Interesting, Kate, in these conversations we talk about language as an entity. Of course, it's not. We are the people that change the language through our minute interactions day by day, both in the spoken realm and, I suppose, in the written realm. And as we've touched on in the past, both of those realms have different ways of doing that. But we do, for shorthand, talk about the language doing things. What's it doing with contronyms? What's the extinction rate versus the birth rate for contronyms?
That's a very good question, Peter. I should sit down and figure that out, because I do have a list, and in fact a growing list, because I keep encountering these, of contronyms. Even prepositions. I know you love prepositions, Peter, so there are problematic
prepositions. I don't know if love is quite the right word. I'm fascinated by them at the moment, yes.
Yes, if you do something for a cold or for your health, there's a good example of for being a contronym.
A contronym, yes.
So, you know, happening all the time, but if they do prove really problematic, as in the case of cleave, which we started with, or let, then one of the forms will disappear. It's rather pompously called intolerable homonymity in linguistics to have this happening. So for language to be efficient, for communication to be efficient, we can't have this case where one word can have contradictory meaning.
Kate, see you again soon.
See you soon.
Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash University. I'm Peter Clark for Inside Language. Until next time.